Hi, I'm Aman.
And I'm Lena.
And this is Grounded Geeks,
where we make the geek world relevant.
And this week, we're going to make, of all things, The Witcher relevant.
With probably some difficulty, but yes, we're talking about The Witcher on this episode. Finally, yes. We decided we're just going to, we're talking about both seasons, right? Just talking about The Witcher overall. Yes. So, yeah, I didn't know anything about The Witcher. I don't know anything about the game that it's based on or the books that the game is based on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the show is based on the books. I think they kind of ignored the video games.
Oh.
I think
visually they have not ignored the video games. I've heard that visually they've been kind of true to the video games, which people love. So, which is smart in that sense. Yeah.
I knew The Witcher was a video game, but I hadn't realized until the show came out that it was actually that the video game is based on a series of books.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know anything about it. I was like, what's Henry Cavill doing right now? Like, I didn't
apparently know. Playing The Witcher in his free time.
Yeah, seriously. I definitely kept making fun of Henry Cavill when I was watching season one, because I was like, what is this voice he's doing? It's like way too deep all the time. And I hate the name Yennefer. I'm like, just call her Jennifer at this point. This is so dumb. And so I was definitely hate watching it. But it's got some intriguing storylines and characters and stuff going on.
So, I actually enjoyed it. So yeah, I mean, assume you didn't like it that much.
I didn't hate it. That's why I watched season two. So
I thought you watched season two because I was like, we should do an episode on The Witcher.
No. I was like, fine, let's see what happens now, since now I'm invested. But no, I mean, it's really interesting. So I know the first thing we wanted to talk about was the concept of time.
Yes. Made some interesting choices.
Right. In season one, basically at the end of season one, you don't realize that things have been told not chronologically but throughout the season. And you realize there have been like big jumps in terms of years and decades even. So yes, go on, Aman.
So when I watched the show the first time around, I had no idea that that's what was happening. Mm-hmm. But when I rewatched season one to prepare for this episode, I picked up on a lot of the clues that they had dropped to show that this is actually being told in non-chronological order. Mm-hmm. And in thinking about it, I was like, oh, that's actually pretty genius, because I realized that sort of the framework that you need, the mindset that you need to watch season one, it's basically all of these different characters leading up to this sort of point of convergence.
Yeah.
All right, of their various destinies, because they didn't use that word enough throughout the show.
I know, seriously. The law of surprise, destiny, child of destiny.
Fight destiny.
Yeah,
you can't fight destiny. And let's not forget about destiny. But the thing is that each of these characters, Geralt, Yennefer, Ciri, they each have very different lifespans. Mm-hmm. All right. So what the show is tracking is actually the different moments of their various lives that lead them to their moment of destiny.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so you've got Geralt and Yennefer who have been alive for hundreds of years.
Is it really hundreds or maybe 100?
I'm going to say more than 100 at least.
Okay.
All right. You've got Geralt who, when you're first introduced to him at the beginning of the show, he's already a seasoned witcher. He's been at this for a long time. He's already a legend in his own right, and then he has that interaction with Renfri, which I guess had some kind of an impact on him because she told him to look out for the girl. I don't know. That was weird.
Yeah.
I didn't quite understand her point. the point of her existing, other than like he started to more be like, well, maybe I shouldn't just kill everything because not every monster is really a monster.
Right.
You know, so that was a moment for him. He was, he had a moment. But that was obviously well before Ciri was even born. And well before this law of surprise bullshit happened.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I assumed, and this was before he met Yennefer. Mm-hmm. All right. And so that was a moment in his life. Now, when that moment happened in his life compared to what Yennefer was going through, it doesn't matter. You know, if you think about it, it doesn't matter because all these characters, they're living their own lives that are separate, and they're having their moments that happen when they happen, I guess. You know, like it doesn't matter when it happens in relation to each other in terms of the timeline.
Right. The one thing that was bothering me though, like it was not clear that decades and decades and decades had passed throughout season one. And you would also think that like if hundreds of years of going are passing, like you would be able to tell from like clothing styles changing or, you know, the environment around them changing, you know, like society make some sort of advancement over time or something, you know, like something changes about, but it all just kind of stayed the same, the environment around them. But that's why it was also hard to tell that so much time was passing.
But if you look at history, let's say like medieval Europe, which I think this is very strongly templated off of.
Yeah.
All right. Somebody born in the year 1000 was living a life that is very similar to somebody who was born in the year 1300. So somebody who's born in the year 1300 is basically doing the same crap that their great, 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 great grandfather did.
Yeah.
You know,
that's true.
This current high-paced advancement in human society is a relatively new thing.
Yeah.
If you think about it. Yeah. Only in the last, I would say, 150 years has society advanced. Has society advanced this much this quickly? All right. And it really had to do with the Industrial Revolution. You know, before that, you know, I mean, the big hindrances, I think, were communication and a specialization of production.
Yeah.
All right.
You don't think even clothing styles or like hairstyles or something would have changed between the year 1000 and 1300, for example?
So not,
I mean, I guess not, I don't know.
Not within a specific, let's say, town.
Yeah.
All right. Because clothing and things like that is a more scarce resource than it is now. Mm-hmm. All right. People would take the clothes, would take hand-me-downs and alter them. And that's how it would just stay in the family, you know, like there's like clothing is not something that would advance. You would have differences if you go from one region to another.
Yeah.
And so if you look at the world of The Witcher, there were a lot of different styles, but it was based on geography.
Right.
And the different kingdoms that existed, not in terms of the time passing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I thought it was interesting because you've got all of these characters who live these ridiculously long lives, all right? And who are-
Especially Ciri, right? Ciri's living at a normal time
pace,
like human time pace, right?
Ciri, her grandfather, but I'm talking about the entire like society of this whole, the whole brotherhood of mages.
I forget what
the name of that tower or whatever.
Right. Yeah, I forget too. Yeah. The mages, but,
the mages and sorcerers and witches and whatnot, like they live really long lives. Like, they've got their clothes and they're just gonna stick with it. Why would they change it up? You know,
I don't know. For fun, you get bored.
Maybe, but you know, if they're kind of advising every single kingdom out there, and they're this major geopolitical force in and of themselves because they've got their people advising the kings and queens of everywhere, you know, they might even be driving some of the staticness that exists in these societies. Like, like they are a force of not changing. They're a force of conservatism. All right. That is very, very powerful. right? Even if they are working in the shadows and not quite sort of outright powerful, they're very powerful.
Right.
And they're driving, I think, a lot of the lack of change that exists in this world. But you know, somebody born in 1300 is doing the exact same job that somebody born in 200 years earlier was doing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. You brought up also geopolitics. And
I did.
That was another thing that was very interesting with whatever was happening with Sintra and Nilfgaard and all these kingdoms. Yeah. I mean, that's also.
And Temeria.
Where's that? I can't keep up with these names. Too many names, too many places. Nilfgaard is a very memorable place. And they also mentioned it 1,000 times. So, yes. So yeah, that was very interesting. Also seemed very medieval.
Yes. And yeah. Nilfgaard, I thought, was very interesting because it reminded me a lot of what happened in France in 1306, 1307, where... What's the name of that king again? Philip the Fourth.
We only know this, guys, because we looked it up right before recording.
We did. I was thinking of it, and I still forgot it, even though I just looked it up. But I remember this event. You know, learning about this event where Philip the Fourth,
King of France,
basically eradicated the Knights Templar. Mm-hmm. All right. Now the Knights Templar are the order of knights that were. Played a really big role in the Crusades. Mm-hmm. They were the military arm, however, they operated rather with quite a lot of freedom from the papacy.
They were the Pope's military, yes.
Uh-huh. Basically, except they had a lot of independence, you know, somehow. Mm-hmm. They could move quite independently of the Pope. You know, the Pope didn't like directly control everything that the Knights Templar did.
Okay. Then who are they like reporting to?
Themselves. I don't know. These various different orders of the Catholic Church it's very complicated and I don't even understand it all. All right.
Fair.
But interestingly, the Knights Templar and the Catholic Church in general had a presence everywhere. Mm-hmm. All right. In medieval Europe, much like this Brotherhood of Mages does in the world of The Witcher. However, the Knights Templar, they also basically invented modern day banking.
Whoa, go on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the way banking basically started is that somebody would have a lot of gold and they would leave it with their local blacksmith. Uh-huh. All right. And the blacksmith would then have the gold and then eventually start to use that gold to make loans and collect interest on it. Uh-huh. All right. So if somebody then wanted to take out some of their money, they'd go to the blacksmith and be like, hey, I left this gold with you. Give me more. I give some of it back to me.
Yeah.
All right. So that was kind of the beginning of banking as we know it, where you are storing your gold somewhere that you know is safe. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, the interesting thing that the Knights Templar did that happened due to the Crusades.
Did they invent interest?
No. They basically invented checks.
Oh.
Where you deposit your money in a bank, you go to another bank, write a check, and they give you the money.
Oh, all right? that's so interesting.
So when people would travel from Europe to the Middle East to either fight in the Crusades or be a part of it or whatever, it was very dangerous to transport the money that you needed, okay, across all this land. Because you're going by, you know, horse and carriage, I guess.
Right.
Walking. Yeah. All right. And it's
bandits,
heavy.
You know.
And it's bandits. Heavy. Gold is fucking heavy. And then bandits would show up on the road.
Yeah.
All right. So what the Knights Templar would do is that you would take your gold to one of the Templar castles that existed throughout Europe.
Yeah.
You would give them your gold. They would give you a slip of paper. And you would then transport this piece of paper to Jerusalem, for example, give it to the Knights Templar there, and they would give you the same amount of gold back.
I'm assuming this paper had some special seal on it or something, right? That made it distinctive. Yeah,
they had versions of authenticating it with seals and things like that, you know? So it had to be that specific piece of paper.
And I'm wondering, because during the time of the Crusades, like how many people were actually literate? and could read, right? And I'm sure it must have been some sort of small symbols or something on it.
A small percentage, but literacy was reserved for basically the wealthy.
Yeah. Okay.
You know,
so anyone who had money in the bank, they could probably
read. The people who had money in the bank.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. That's fair. That's fair.
Literacy was reserved for them. But yeah, you know, I mean, that's how, like, they would authenticate it, you know, the piece of paper, either through wax seals of the specific castle where the gold was deposited or whatever. Mm-hmm. All right. And then the Knights Templar would take the gold that they would collect from everybody. Mm-hmm. All right. And make loans to the various kingdoms in Europe who were fighting a lot of wars amongst each other. All right.
Interesting.
So one of the driving factors for going back to Philip IV to eradicate the Knights Templar, all right, was that he owed the Templars a lot of money.
Oh, so he just had them killed.
He just had them killed.
Screw you guys.
And the year before, he did the same thing to the Jews in France, where he kicked out all the Jews in France and seized all of their money. And then the year afterwards, in 1307, I think the way he did it was he called all the Knights Templar for like a conference, a special conference or something, and then murdered them all in the middle of the night.
Oh my God. What the
hell? Yeah, it was a,
yeah,
it was a brutal time.
Yeah. So
it reminded me of Nilfgaard. Going back to The Witcher.
Going back to The Witcher, that's what Nilfgaard reminded you of, the Knights Templar. Great.
Yes.
Interesting. Well, when you and I were talking about this before, I was also like, wouldn't the King of France be afraid of feeling the wrath of God by killing, you know, the Knights Templar who were connected to the Pope and all that? But and then I was trying to think of like the role of religion, if there is any, in The Witcher. And do you think there is any? I don't know.
I don't think there's so much religion as much as there is
customs and traditions.
Traditions and fear of the supernatural. You know, I mean, the reason this Brotherhood of Mages is so powerful, I think, is because this is a world where there are monsters and there is magic.
Yeah.
You know, and magic isn't open to anyone and everyone.
Right.
You know, so these various kings and queens, they would need mages to help protect them from the supernatural,
right,
and to advise them on especially matters that involved, you know, magic and monsters.
Right.
So
right.
I think it's more that, like, what if all of our superstitions and religion were real?
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden it's not religion that you're thinking of.
It's just reality.
This is reality now.
Yeah. To say that religion isn't reality, because for other folks it is, you know, whatever. But
yeah, but it's not
it's not just something world. That's in a holy book. It's like something people are living and experiencing.
Actually living with, day to day, where you might actually where like in Islam, there's like fear of the devil and fear of jinn. Mm-hmm. You know, and things like that. But it's like, okay, what
not
if there's a
fear
world
of jinn? Jinn is different. Jinns are not like the devil. They are basically, like in the Quran, it says jinns exist and they just live in sort of like a parallel universe.
But imagine that if we did interact with jinn every day and we were actually attacked by demons and devils.
That
was everyday life.
Right. That's The Witcher, the world of
the devil is real and he's literally knocking on your door.
Yeah. Speaking of magic, there's also the elves, right?
Yes.
Can all of them do magic or only some of them? I can't remember.
As best as I could tell, it was a some of them kind of situation as well.
Right. So I thought it was very interesting that in the world of The Witcher, people hate the elves. They shit on them and discriminate against them. Mm-hmm. Or like they're really they are the oppressed minority, which is interesting because in most fantasy, you know, stories, novels, whatever, they're very much put on a pedestal.
And
this was interesting how they turned that on its head.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually, talking about Philip IV and everything that he did, that actually kind of reminds me where if the Knights Templar and the Catholic Church are, if they are being, if the Brotherhood of Mages is the metaphor for the Catholic Church and the Knights Templar, the elves are a metaphor for the Jews of Europe, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking that.
Where in Europe, they were, you know, not allowed to own land. So they got into businesses where they became, this whole population was mostly financiers, mm-hmm. you know? And then it was like, and all of a sudden it's like, and now we owe you too much money. We're done with you. And
right.
kick them yeah. out of your country. What Philip IV did and other, and Spain did with its Inquisition and everything.
Right.
All right. So, and they're yeah. driven out of these various lands. You know, that's kind of what happened to the elves. They introduced human beings to magic.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And how to do magic. And then eventually there was the cleansing.
Yeah.
You know, which interesting, one of the clues in season one was Yennefer and what's that other guy's name?
The bard?
No, not the bard. The research guy, the researcher.
Oh, mage. Astrid, something like that.
Something like that. I forget his name. He had a very forgettable name, but a very yeah. memorable role.
Yes.
He had a memorable role with a very forgettable name. but they were talking about the cleansing as though it had just happened. And then
wait, what cleansing was that in The Witcher? Like cleansing of the elves?
Of the elves.
Oh, okay.
And then as though it had just happened in their recent memories.
Right.
All right. But then you jump to what Ciri was talking about with her grandmother. And they're talking about the cleansing as though it's some event that happened in like far off ancient history. So yeah. that was one of the clues that tipped me off, at least on my second time watching.
Yeah.
So they dropped a lot of little hints like that I thought was interesting. But
yeah. Wait, so who orchestrated the cleansing again in The Witcher?
I think a lot of it was
was it Queen humans?
Calanthe, I think.
What?
Was a big okay. was the main character who was like hated elves for some reason.
Well, wasn't she? And then we find out in season two that Ciri's great, 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 great grandmother was an elf.
Yes.
So it must maybe, I mean, I don't know. I'm guessing it's from Queen Calanthe's side, but
probably.
Yeah.
Probably because not just hypocrisy, very much, you know, kind of also reminds me of Nazi Germany.
Yeah. Wasn't Hitler part Jewish?
I don't know if he was part Jewish, but there was this whole thing where it's like, oh, if you even have one ancestor
yeah.
who happened to be Jewish, you're right. Jewish and we're killing you.
Right. You know? I mean, the same thing with enslaved Africans and Black people in the US. Yep. If you had
yep.
and what, like a drop of Black blood in you, you could be enslaved. And yeah.
Yes. I was thinking of the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And I think it was kind of like that. I think that's what they were kind of that's the sort of thinking that they were that the author was drawing on
yeah. when
writing these characters and drafting and creating this world.
Yeah.
So I mean there's a lot of parallels going on here.
It's very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's anytime there's any sort of like oppression or discrimination happening in a fantasy sci-fi story, I mean, it's very easy for us to draw examples from the real world.
Yeah. That whole saying, yeah. what is it? The truth is stranger than fiction.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, you can have the craziest, most fantastical world that you've created, mm-hmm. but there's always some element of it where it's pulling something horrible yeah. that happened in the real world.
Yeah.
I mean, not always something horrible, but there's a connection there, you
yeah.
know, always a connection. And especially with things like this, you don't have to look very far to find the more horrible equivalent in human history.
Yeah. I mean, you don't even have to look into history. Let's talk about examples of happening right now, like the horrible concentration camps that China has for their Uyghur populations.
Yeah,
that's an example. What's happening yeah. to the Rohingya in Myanmar? Mm-hmm. You know, like, I mean, there's like
it's true million, today.
Yeah, there's yeah. just like a ton of examples even happening right now.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Also, just look at the U.S. and how African Americans are being treated now.
And it's yeah,
things
are better does not mean they are good.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, on that
depressing note,
did we have anything else we wanted to talk about The Witcher?
Well,
I feel like we covered our main themes.
The one thing that I wanted to talk about was like the view of time that each of these characters had, going back mm-hmm. to the very first topic, you know, and yeah. how they process time. Mm-hmm. So like if you just watch the scenes in season one where you're just following Geralt, you know, mm-hmm. you were saying how you didn't get the sense that decades had passed.
Yeah.
You know,
I just had no idea.
Each of these events.
Right.
But I thought it was genius because that's how he's experiencing it.
Yeah.
You know,
that's fair.
He's not experiencing decades the same way you and I would experience decades. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about it in the same way for like a baby, you know? So
yeah.
For our longtime listeners, y'all know I recently had a kid. Hey. And I was thinking that, you know, a month in my child's life is like the same as like almost 10 years in my life.
Right.
You know, 10 years ago, I was a totally different person. And 10 years ago feels like a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And that long time ago for my kid is a month.
Yeah. You
know? He's not the same person he was a month ago.
No.
And he barely probably remembers things that happened a month ago.
I don't you know he's remembering anything right now, right?
I mean, you know, yeah. not really. But
I don't know. When do kids start remembering things? Like probably a few years in.
I'm sure there's some sense of memory still happening. But
yeah.
As you get older, the oldest events in your life fade. Mm-hmm. And for a baby who's less than a year old, mm-hmm. a year ago is the same as us thinking about when we were two.
Right, exactly. So,
you know,
yeah.
So, yeah, it fades. I don't think memory is still there. That's how they learn.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. but how that memory is processed in terms of fractions, mm-hmm. like the human mind doesn't process things as hard concepts of time. They process it in terms of fractions, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Half a lifetime ago for you or I is like a blip for a senior citizen, somebody who's in their 80s or even 90s, you know, for them, it was like yesterday that this event happened, you know, 15 mm-hmm. or 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And whereas for us, that's half of our lifetime, for example. Mm-hmm. I think it's just interesting. And the way they told the story in season one of The Witcher really brought that to the forefront of my mind, where these characters are processing time very differently. Mm-hmm. So for them, like you have Yennefer, who's, let's say, I'm guessing, a couple hundred years old, mm-hmm. all right? 50 years ago for her was like nothing.
Right.
You know,
right.
That was the same as like 5 years ago for us, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. and same thing for Geralt. And for Ciri, she's like, what, 14, 15 years old?
Yeah.
You know, 12 to 15 years old. So
I think
for
she's
her,
like 16 now, or at least in season
In season two, but I'm talking about during over the course of season one,
right?
Where
right.
all of her critical events that lead her to her wait for it, destiny, all right, are crammed into like a year and a half.
Yeah,
you know, mm-hmm. or less time. That's when all of her critical events happen.
Right.
Whereas for Geralt and for Yennefer, it's spread out a lot more. And I know our listeners can't see this because this is an audio podcast, but I'm like talking so much with my hands.
There's a lot of hand waving happening, everyone. Yes. But yeah, no, that's very true. I love when movies and TV shows use time as a way to tell stories, you know, where they're able to really pull back and show you a big picture view and then also zoom in onto key moments and whatever. So,
I understand why people were really frustrated with that and hated it.
Yeah.
But it's genius. The way that season one was told, if you really think about it, it's kind of genius.
I wish at least at the end of season one, I had been told like X number of years has passed, you know, like, cause I literally had no idea until I was watching a recap of season one and I was like, oh. This was like hundreds of years.
Okay. Yeah. I think my only issue with that though is two issues with that. One is we just need to know a lot of time has passed. Mm-hmm. The exact amount of time doesn't really matter.
I guess. Right? I just would prefer to know.
Second, how do you explain that without having TLDR rolling titles? You know, I mean, I don't know how they would have explained that. And personally, I am not a fan of explanatory paragraphs that you have to read at the beginning
I'm not
the
saying
of a movie or a show.
Yeah, I'm not wanting to read paragraphs. I'm just saying, like, throw in a line that's like 100 years later or something, you know, like literally that would have been helpful.
But. Yeah, it would have been helpful, but I don't know, unnecessary. I feel like it would have taken away from the way they told the story. So I personally
want. Yeah, that's
fair. I'm a fan of how they did this.
I'm sure I would appreciate it more, but if I like were to rewatch season one like you did. So
I definitely appreciated it more for exactly that reason.
Yeah.
I picked up on a lot more pieces, and it really changed how I watched the show when I rewatched season one.
Yeah.
So
Makes sense. All cool. Right. Well,
and now I'm done.
Great. On that note, as always, thank you for listening to Grounded Geeks.
And we'll catch you next time.